Welcome back to the Blushy Boys podcast. BlushyBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. Let's get the show underway. Welcome back, everyone. This is the Blushy Boys podcast. BlushyBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. I am your host, Brandon Day. Along with me tonight, my co-host, Ashley McLennan. Ashley, what's up tonight? How are we doing?
We are good. I have a kitten sleeping on me. I've had some wine. We're really just living our best lives.
Yep, this is the nightcap. and we've got some good stuff today. Sadly, for any Tigers fan who's not in the Detroit area, I don't think anyone gets to see any of this stuff, or maybe there's clips later on that they'll post, but the Tigers have been running their live stream via Fox Sports Detroit, and so we had like a little night game tonight, which was pretty cool, and it was weird. I've seen a few of these now, even though they've been mostly during the day, during work hours, but it's been interesting. Tonight they were piping in crowd noise for the first time as an experiment, and that, like, at first something was wrong, I think, because it was all loud and weird sounding, and then it seemed like they got it dialed in, and it didn't really bother me. It's just sort of like, just to have that sort of white noise underneath everything, like that just that crowd, yeah, low roar, didn't really bother me. So I don't know if they're going to do that, but
think they said all 30 teams are going to do it, and from what I heard, unless this was just a joke, but I think it's legit, is that it's going to be the same crowd noise that they use in MLB The Show.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, see, I hadn't read that. Oh, that's great. Well, that makes sense, because it did kind of sound like it, yeah. I don't know. That's weird. I mean, I guess, since it's just a TV program now and no one can watch in person, I guess having a laugh track or some background crowd noise is okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hope they don't drown out the players, though, because one of the best things about all this has been being able to really clearly hear the players get excited about stuff and cheering and yelling and screaming about things. So hopefully,
well, I hope they continue to like mic up players. That for me has been so much fun.
Yeah.
For like when it does happen, I think I've heard somewhere that like they have or are going to mic up Christian Yelich for a game, and like, you know, it's fun to get these guys on mic, and I hope they do more of it.
Yeah, you know, they don't have to be on there all game long, but if you could just, like, a couple innings, you know, rather than kind of doing the thing where you talk to the manager or the, you know, you talk to the pitching coach and stuff, and they just kind of are mid-game and just trying to get rid of you for the most part. It's, yeah, I would rather hear from the players and see from the players' perspective. I mean, I don't know, all you can do in this situation, I guess, is try things. Like, if you're going to try to have this season anyway, like, experimenting seems like the way to go. And they've done some things like having the helmet cam on the catcher.
That's fun. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, like, it's a weird view because you really can't see that well. But you do get kind of a sense for what it actually looks like when a dude's coming way down the mound at you and throwing the ball past you before you can kind of see what's even going on.
Yeah, I like it because it really does just kind of drive home, no pun intended, how fast those pitches are coming at you. I think you don't really like see it the same way from the side. And it just, yeah, it's a really kind of daunting look at things. Like, it's like, oh, that does come at you fast.
Yeah, it's just like a little bug just whizzing past you. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still prefer the center field cam for the most part, and I hope that that's mostly what they do. But I think, like, yeah, with each pitcher, if you could mix in a couple from behind home plate, it's cool. It kind of shows
or
you, like,
throw it in there as like a replay shot, like, you know, get your things, and then, oh, let's look at the catcher's eye view. It's like when they do those 4K slowed down ones where it shows you the swing at like super slow mo.
Yeah, where you see the dust coming off the bat and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. It's just like an alternate. Like, it's not teaching you anything, but it's just kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, it just gives you a little bit of a different look at it. I love that super slow-mo because you can see that the bats, like, actually bend a little bit. Like, there's that much.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And you see the ball compress on the bat. That stuff is cool. And they're going to have to pull out all the stops with these kind of tricks to make this as good a product as it's going to be this year. You know, the other thing I like about it, too, is you kind of get to see, like, who gets down the mound at you fast. You can kind of see, like, the angle that the pitcher throws from, you know, whether it's, like, Boyd coming from way to your, you know, to your right as a hitter, or whether it's, you know, Matt Manning coming, like, way down the mound, like, this super tall kid just, like, feeling like he's, like, in your face before he lets the thing go. Yeah, it's pretty cool that way. But of course, this is all just in service of the Riley Green show right now, because Riley Green is just out there like just doing ridiculous things. It seems like every game, he homered off Matt Manning tonight.
He's like auditioning. Like, you know how they say towards the postseason, like everybody's really, really just angling to make the team next year. And when you hit September, everyone's really just auditioning for a job. I feel like that's what Riley Green's doing right now. He's like, look, guys, I know I'm 19. I know I'm young, but like, I'm good. Like, put me in, coach. You know what I mean? Like, and he's just, he's so fun to watch. And I think it's been a really long time since we've had that. Like, somebody fun, somebody like just riveting that makes you want to see what he's going to do next. And I mean, like, Derek Hill to a lesser extent, same kind of thing. But like, Riley Green's just been amazing.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, some of the, I go back to before they drafted him and some of the reports, you know, and this is the way it goes, you know, 2019 draft. By the time that comes around, it's June, and some of the reports are on him from, like, the previous summer, and, you know, there was a lot of concern, like, well, you know, I mean, he might be able to play right field for you, but we don't know if he has enough speed, and, you know, he said it in a few interviews that he really, like, took that as, like, a, you know, kind of an FU from scouts and went, like, 100% to work on that stuff, got himself, like, a, you know, a specific CrossFit trainer, and worked on all that, worked on his burst, his speed, flexibility, the whole thing, and also looks like he's put on, you know, maybe 15 pounds of good muscle since the last time we saw him last year, and he's just out there just killing it and just running all over the field. He made a diving play down the right field line playing right field tonight. He made a leaping over the wall home run robbery of CJ Cron a couple days ago in the left field. He's made a couple nice running catches in center field. I mean, he's just kind of all over the place out there. And I, you know, I don't know if he's going to stay in center field or if he can actually like play that in center field regularly, but man, he's just one of those dudes that does seem to have knack for rising to the moment when he needs to. You know, he's in there with the big boys and it seems to show, cuz yeah, he's getting it done.
Well, I mean, the fact that he's standing out against the big boys is a really good sign. Like, you look at that and you're like, who are we talking about coming out of like summer camp? We're not talking about Miguel Cabrera. We're not talking, I mean, CJ Cron, yeah, I'm not mad at how he's been doing, but like, we're talking about Riley Green, and I think that says something.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really think of anyone else who stood out as much in the limited amount of games that we've been able to see. You know, there's been some good pitching performances, like Ronny Garcia's looked pretty good, Nolan Blackwood, like two guys that are kind of like, you know, will probably get a spot in the bullpen. I'm not 100% on Blackwood, but both of them, you know, have a shot at that. Garcia, because he's a Rule 5 guy, will almost certainly have a shot at it. But yeah, they've looked kind of good, and it's been sort of like the, you know, the veterans and the guys who you'd expect a little bit more of who haven't really been sharp. Matt Boyd hasn't looked particularly good. Jordan Zimmerman's looked like Jordan Zimmerman. Ivan Nova.
Homer struggled a little bit, but I think that's to be expected.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just coming back. I think we'll see him kind of steady himself out. The problem is that there's not really a lot of time to steady out. And I know, I think even Gardy said that he actually might consider using Fulmer in an opener kind of role.
Yeah.
Which I think you and I kind of talked about last time about how now is the time for them to really play around and do weird things with pitching and with everything. And I could see him being a really solid candidate for like just going two or three innings tops and then getting swapped out. And I think that's actually a really smart way to use him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. It's, I mean, it makes sense like from a competitive standpoint. And then, yeah, it also makes sense just from the fact that, like, you know, some of these guys look more stretched out than others. And obviously, yeah, in a Michael Fulmer's case, you know, they need to work with him slowly and not, you know, expect him to go out there and throw 90 to 100 pitches and have his old velocity back and all that. He just needs to get some work. So, yeah, maybe you could pair him up with, I think Gardenhire himself even suggested maybe Tyler Alexander, which is kind of a good pairing to go right, left. Something like that could work. Yeah. So who else has looked good? Spencer Turnbull's looked pretty good for the most part. It hasn't had great command, but the stuff looks really good. But probably Casey Mize has looked like the best pitcher in camp so far.
Which
isn't terribly surprising. I would have guessed it would be Matt Boyd, but yeah, Casey looks pretty darn close to being ready. It's pretty hard to get a read, of course, too, when you're, you know, they're playing against each other. Like the first few games you had, the catchers calling balls and strikes, which must have been awkward.
Yeah.
So obviously we're not getting like the legit 100% look at what's going on, but yeah, overall, I mean, Casey's looked pretty good. It feels more and more like that they're going to, that they're going to bring him up sometime this year to pitch. So
Yeah.
I think we can feel fairly confident in that. I think the calculation is that 1 day of 1 day of service time in this season is worth like 2.8 total, so that the 60 games all comes out to a full season. So, if they just let Casey like work up to 90 pitches, he'll probably be there, early mid-August, and he also won't lose a year of service time. So it should all come together without them having to manipulate anything or get too crazy. So
Yeah.
yeah, so hopefully we'll see that. And then, and there's been some pretty high-end prospect talent on display. We haven't really seen a whole lot from Spencer Torkelson. We've talked a lot about Riley Green, but Matt Manning's been out there. We've seen Derek Hill making a whole bunch of Derek Hill type diving plays in the outfield, which he does. So yeah, all that's been pretty encouraging. It's just so, we normally think of spring training as like a, an exhibition and like a hard time to really like get a read on how anybody's going to actually do in the season. And this feels even worse. Like some guys seem like they've been prepped for 3 months, and other guys look like they kind of lost a step and are trying to get it
Yeah.
back. So.
Well, it's tough too comparing it to spring training because in spring training, yeah, it's everyone kind of just, stretching out and shaking off the cobwebs, but also at least you're seeing them up against other teams. So
Yeah.
you're actually seeing how they are faring against like active players on other rosters. And all we've really been able to see so far is how the Tigers are doing against the Tigers. And it's going well slash terrible. Terribly, depending on which perspective you look at it. And I mean, Sports Illustrated just released an article yesterday or the day before about which teams they anticipate being the worst in the shortened season. And of course, everybody's like Orioles, Tigers, Marlins. And I'm like, well, I mean, that's not a huge surprise based on all the predictions going into what the normal season was supposed to look like. But at the same time, I mean, I'm not saying the Tigers are going to like bust out the gate and suddenly make it to the postseason. They could. It's a weird season to begin with, so who even knows what'll happen.
Yeah.
But I think it's also going to be a very different team and a different outcome than what it would have been if it was a normal season, because we are going to see some different players and some different moves than what we would have seen if it was a standard baseball 162 game season. So I'm actually curious to see if the same kind of predictions that people had for the Tigers will stand.
Yeah, because it is just to bring up the Jordan Zimmermann example, like, we're not going to have 3 months of or 4 months of Jordan Zimmermann in the rotation. Maybe we wouldn't have anyway, but I assume if he's not pitching very well, and they're a week or two into the season, he's going to get bumped to some kind of middle relief role, which we know that they probably wouldn't have done, in the first part of the year. But we're so close to the end. It's just kind of a mad dash sprint, trying to keep people healthy, which I don't know, is going about as well as you'd expect, I guess.
It is, but did you
It
see?
hasn't been terrible, but then you also see like the competitive nature of the season is also just kind of being borked by the fact that guys are opting out. You just never know what guys, home circumstances are like, what the health conditions of their family members or
Well,
themselves are. It's like
I mean,
you can't
you
blame
look
them a
at
bit.
like, no, you can't blame anybody for doing it. Like, you look at, like, Buster Posey is a great example. Like, he just opted out of the season because he and his wife just adopted preemie twins.
Yeah.
So like, of course. Like, of course you're not going to play a season when you have like premature twins in like NICU
Yeah.
that
Yeah.
like are already so fragile and you're going to have to be spending all that time in a hospital anyway. No. I mean, like you nobody owes us an explanation, and I know we've talked about that before, but I mean, the explanations we're getting, I think, are very valid.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, like, since these guys are little, I mean, we all go through this in our own ways, everybody, not just baseball players, but like it's on them to like, show up and play through pain and, do what needs to be done, all that kind of stuff. So you can tell that it's a painful thing to have to announce. They know they're going to take some grief for it. And then you've got guys like on the other side of it, you know, like Daniel Norris, who obviously desperately wants to play and is apparently feeling, you know, basically 100% again, but still has, you know, has a little of the COVID still in there, tipping the test to negative. And you just don't know how long that'll take, because in some cases people are healthy and like still testing positive for weeks. Yeah, it's I don't know. It's pretty weird. I mean, overall, I think we would both agree that this isn't really going to be like what you would think of as a legitimate season, because you know, so much of it is going to just come down to like which team is lucky enough to stay healthy, which team, I guess, maybe does the best with their wearing masks and washing hands and distancing and stuff like that. But we don't have Fangraph metrics for all that, so it's pretty hard to predict. Like, who's the cleanliest guy on that team? Who's the shut in who won't even go out to a bar, you know, when things are fine, and all that, all those kind of metrics we would need.
It's also kind of scary and a little gross to have to imagine that, like, but was it one of the guys from the Astros who said that, like, the team that wins the World Series this year is going to be the team that has the fewest people get COVID?
I've said that too, unfortunately.
And like,
yeah.
And it's true, and it's such a grim outlook, and I don't know, and it just, like, it's a terrible, terrible thing to say that, like, the team that has the fewest members put in, like, life-threatening danger is the one that has the best chance of winning.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And that's why, you know, I think, yeah, we should really just be taking this as, like, you know, the players really desperately want to play baseball. We want to watch baseball. And that's all this is. You know, it's not, it's just going to be some baseball with major league players. But, you know, worrying about who wins what and, you know, I mean, if you win the World Series this year, like, I'm sorry, but, you know.
Doesn't really count.
Doesn't really count. Yeah, I don't think anyone's really going to care.
Like, the same thing, like, if you win the Cy Young this year, like, is anybody really going to be like, yeah, congrats on your 6 wins?
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's just kind of ridiculous. You know, and I've heard people argue that, like, well, they're all playing by the same rules. And it's like, well, yeah, they are. But there's a reason that you have 162 games in baseball unlike anything else. And it's because there's so much chance in baseball, and you need a long season to really kind of sort things out, see who can hold up for the whole season, who has the deep enough roster to do that. There's a whole host of reasons why you need that many games to kind of make it clear. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I understand how it goes. Once there's baseball on TV, like, I'm rooting for the Tigers, I want to win, blah, blah, blah. It just takes you over. But, yeah, we're just going to have the split personality all season long between, like, yeah, we want baseball and we want our team to win, but mostly we just kind of want to, like, get through this and make sure people are as healthy as we can keep them. So,
well, it's just like me on Twitter. It's like, hey, we should probably cancel all sports this year because this is dangerous and stupid. And then I see Derek Hill make an amazing catch and I'm like, yes, the future is bright.
Yeah.
Just give me all the clips. And it's very hard to find the balance between those two things.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And, you know, and from, you know, all of our perspective, you know, who are back at work and everything, it's also like, well, we're back at work in, you know, subpar conditions, taking our chances here. So I guess, like, they have to, too. And at least they have, you know, a lot better resources sort of to deal with it. So, and they work outside for the most part. So hopefully all these things will lead us to not have any major catastrophes. You know, you and I were talking about that, the 2018 influenza baseball article a little bit. And
the 1918 influenza baseball?
Yeah. Did I say 20?
You sure did. Yeah.
Well, damn it. Yeah, the 1918.
Slight difference.
The so-called Spanish flu pandemic, yeah, of 1918. But yeah, that, you know, there was like an umpire, like a really well-regarded umpire who died from the Spanish flu. And obviously the Spanish flu was, you know, much more deadly. It was the last, like, crazily deadly, like, global pandemic. So, so yeah, I mean, there weren't too many people who passed away in that. So I was sort of like, well, that doesn't really, I don't know how comparable any of this is going to be, but hopefully we can come out without anybody passing away or being horribly sick. And
yeah, well, I think that's the real, that would be the real win, right? Like, I don't care who wins the World Series at this point, unless it's the Tigers, but like,
right, exactly. Yeah.
That's, or the Rays, but
that's the dual personality again. Yep.
But like, I think that the only way you can count this season as a win at all is if everybody comes out of it alive.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm trying to be optimistic. Like, the, you know, obviously the mortality rate has come down a lot as they've tested a lot of people. It doesn't doesn't seem quite so bad on that score anymore, but there's just still the fact that anybody who gets it, you know, even if you're not particularly at risk of death from it, you know, a lot of people are knocked out for months at a time and, you know, not getting their breathing back and still having chest pain and having, you know, heart issues from clotting and all that kind of stuff. I mean, any of those things are possible. So, yeah, I'm just saying my prayers here and hoping we can keep that stuff at bay as much as possible, because yeah, it's gonna be hella awkward to be enjoying the game and like watching on the ticker like, oh, so and so is really sick and in ICU somewhere, you know, some other player. So it's definitely weird times, but you know, gotta go on, I guess.
If that's the way they've decided to run it, then yes, they do have to go on.
Yeah,
I think that was one of the questions
we got. Oh yeah, yep.
Will there be a season? And I'm like, well, I'll tell you on July 24th.
A lot of people are still just like, nah, there's just no way. So, you know, there's a wide range of opinion and nobody knows. But yeah, we're definitely in a just enjoy it while you can kind of position, unfortunately.
Well, it's going to be tricky too, because we've already seen teams like the Nationals and like the Dodgers kind of get hampered by local restrictions as well, right?
Yeah.
Because we're seeing kind of some crackdowns in the Los Angeles and DC areas involving kind of the uptick of cases. So that's something else we have to kind of keep an eye on, because it may not be up to MLB at a certain point whether or not those games can go on, right?
Yeah.
So there's all sorts of things that could happen, and I'm sure in those cities they're already looking at alternatives. I know the Blue Jays have obviously been struggling to find a place to play because Canadian border shutdown's just been extended to August 21st and all sorts of difficulties there. I think they're like looking at Buffalo, but yeah, it's lots of things need to be resolved before the season can happen. And since we're already, what, we're 8 days away?
Yeah, nine, I guess. Yeah.
9 days away.
Yeah.
They got to work on getting that done pretty quickly.
Right. And, you know, and it seems like it took like at least the first week just to kind of get the testing problems sorted out and actually getting everybody back to practicing. The Giants, I think the Dodgers and a couple other teams, maybe the Rangers, have all, you know, basically just started practice like late last week. So, yeah, there's going to be a wide, you know, kind of variance in who's really ready to go and how prepared various teams are. As far as the Tigers are concerned, like things seem to have gone pretty well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple guys missing, but everything's gone off on schedule. So I don't know. I mean, there might be an advantage there that they're just, you know, have had things go reasonably well. Michigan, it's after being one of the major hotspots in April, is in far better shape now. So they're at a little bit less risk than, yeah, teams trying to play in Southern California, Texas, Arizona, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what any of that portends, but man, this is all very weird. This is very weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's deeply unprecedented.
Yeah, yeah.
There's really no way to compare it to anything we've ever witnessed before.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Which, yeah, just leads to, you know, kind of an inability to make, or when people do come with, like, the strong takes, I'm just kind of mocking them, because, like, it's just like, no, nobody knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, none of us know what'll happen until it happens at this point.
Yeah. We do know one thing is going to happen, assuming we get there, and that's that it appears that, as one would hope, Mr. Matt Boyd is going to be our opening day starter.
So,
Ron Gardenhire 100... did not confirm this 100%, but he what is that, there's a non-denial denial, and then this must be a non-confirmed confirmation?
Yeah. Gardenhire-ism. What did he say? He said he'll let us know when he can confirm, when he's allowed to tell us that Matt Boyd will be the opening day starter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which means, I don't know if Cody Stavenhagen listens to our podcast or not. I know he's been on it. I owe him an apology. Because I 100% said to him on Twitter, I'm like, have you even met Ron Gardenhire? Of course Jordan Zimmermann will be the opening day starter.
Yep.
Because, frankly, that has been how things have gone in the Gardenhire era.
Yep.
It's all based on seniority and how long a player has been playing. And that's how he picks his opening day starter. The oldest school guy gets the start.
Yeah. And
Matt Boyd deserves it, no question whatsoever.
Absolutely. I mean, he's unquestionably, yeah, the staff ace, such as it is.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest leaders on the team, obviously. So, Yeah, he's got to be the one in there. So we got that piece of news, and we also got a couple others because the Tigers released Zach Godley a couple days ago, who didn't look too bad in the one outing I saw him, but just wasn't going to do much for you other than kind of be like a long relief type or something like that. So the Tigers cut him, and interestingly, like the Boston Red Sox snatched him right up, and a couple of our Boston cohort in the SB Nation channel were talking about the fact that he was probably their number two starter. So
Yeah, that's rough.
that tells you where the Boston Red Sox fan base is at right at the moment, which is delicious. Good for
Yeah, I
them.
mean, I'm not going to complain about it.
I know. You know what's funny is that sometimes they do look for some sympathy, and I'm just like, you have got to be kidding me.
Yeah,
There's no
no,
sympathy for y'all.
sorry.
Yep. Get your fans right out there chasing Mookie Betts out of there because he doesn't want to deal with all the screaming idiots in the outfield.
Who can blame him?
And let's see. So we got two more pieces of news then because yeah, there's spaces opening up here. And so Alex Lang and Zach Hess, two of the Tigers' best relief prospects, have been added to the player pool. So they probably, I would assume, will be taxi squatting it most of the year, unless one of them shows something the way Nolan Blackwood has this year. Another guy who, based on how far he'd progressed through the minor leagues, you wouldn't have really thought he would be there, but he's throwing strikes and the stuff is pretty funky. And Ron Gardenhire loves to have him, like some kind of a, Steve Cishek type kind of side armor, someone with a funky angle. So he may win the funky angle job.
The funky angle job. I love that.
They gotta have that guy. There's always gotta be that guy. So. So that'll be kind of cool. I'm pretty interested in Zach Hess, in particular. So I'm just kind of curious to see how he shapes up against the guys he'll be facing. But it's been weird, like watching the prospects like interacting with the major league players, and because the major leaguers aren't going 100%, it can fool you. Like we're watching Derek Hill like getting hits and like diving all over the place in center field, running the ball down like a madman. And you start to look at it and you're like, man, I don't know. Derek Hill might be the best player on the field, other than Riley Green.
Well, when you're looking at it, and Derek Hill and Riley Green are your most exciting players, that doesn't really say a lot for the existing core of players. And then the other thing I had to think about the other day was how many pickups the Tigers made in the offseason that I would 100% forgotten about. Like, because nothing was happening, I'm like, oh yeah, CJ Cron. Oh yeah, Jonathan Scope. Oh yeah,
And actually,
Ivan
they've been
Nova.
swinging it well.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, we have all these players on our team. I'm like, oh, that's right. Who are these guys? Jordy Mercer. Yeah, he's back.
Yep. He's looking like he's angling to be the utility infielder. I would expect.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it.
No, it's fine. I mean, I know they love the dude, and I don't know if they really had somebody else I wanted to see play. I'd be more up in arms about it, but it seems like Jamer Candelario is going to get, probably most of the time at third base. I haven't really seen Dowell Lugo do much of anything. But again, I hate to say that because we're only getting these weird bursts and little looks at what's going on there. So it's hard to know what the Tigers think, and it's hard to know, watching from their perspective, like what kind of pitching each guy is facing because, we're not seeing most of these at bats, and we're not seeing like who's throwing like they're ready for the season to start, and who still looks like they need 3 weeks to get it going. There's a lot of details there that are just kind of hard to parse. So yeah, it has been good to talk to Mr. Stavenhagen a little bit. We had those two podcasts up on the site that you can check out. That's two lengthy interviews with Cody. So yeah, it helps to have the view from down there as to what's going on. And yeah, I mean, you look at the offense and CJ Cron and Jonathan Scope are both looking like they're swinging the bat pretty well, and that adds some real power and depth to the lineup. Miguel Cabrera came into summer camp looking at least as good as he did in the spring, which is encouraging. So there's a little bit of offense there. Nico's looked pretty good at the plate. Has looked a little sloppy defensively. I saw some things today, like where someone didn't tag up on a fly ball to center. I think it was Kristen Stewart at third, like took a few steps down the line, and then the ball was caught and had to run back. So, Tiger baseball, that particular brand of not necessarily the smartest, most heads up play going on out there. That's been familiar at least, so that's been
Vaguely
comforting.
sloppy shenanigans.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, you know, it's looking like a Tigers baseball team. It's just really hard to get a read. Like, is this rotation gonna be kind of okay? Last year they were actually pretty much middle of the pack, and you would think, you know, an extra year for Spencer Turnbull and then bringing in Nova as a little better
Having Fulmer
depth.
back.
Yep, having Fulmer back out there, you know, having Casey Mize, you know, hopefully available, you know, a couple weeks into the season. Yeah, there's a chance that the pitching staff could actually be fairly good. And that would be nice to see, and it would kind of set them up for how they want to approach the offseason. I think, like, what I would hope more than anything is that it would look like, okay, they're pitching well, a couple of the young guys are hitting well, and it encourages Chris Ilitch in an offseason which there is going to be, like, zero free agent dollars spent to just, you know, start working his way in there. Like, you don't have to, like, go ham and sign, like, the biggest player out there, but keep hunting for those bargains and locking them up for a couple years rather
Yeah,
than just kind of. Yeah, the
get
you know,
yourself a
the
solid third
mercenary.
baseman. Do something, you know?
Yeah. Oh, we got Torkelson now, right?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure Spencer's not quite major league ready.
Yep.
If we could find a stopgap for 2 to 3 years, I think that would give them enough time.
Yep. Should have got Travis Shaw last offseason, Tigers. But even like a guy like him, CJ Cron, I know I'm going to go back and play the old favorites here, but yeah, you know, CJ Cron, like I'd love to have CJ Cron on for another year or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be fine. We don't really have a second baseman. Isaac Paredes, I don't believe has been able to get out of Mexico. They're announcing things, you know, like the positive COVID test guys right now are just getting put on the 10-day injured list, and we don't really know why necessarily. You tend to assume that if no injury is announced, that it is probably positive COVID test. But then,
You
yeah.
don't like to make that assumption, though. I think we should keep
Yeah.
that in mind. Is that while it may be the obvious thing, I get really annoyed at reports that just say, well, it hasn't been said this, but I'm pretty sure it is, because it's just a dangerous thing to speculate about.
Yeah.
But it is worth noting the way that they're announced. Like you make a valid point. If they're not talking about an injury, it's because there's different. We kind of talked about this, is that there's different allowances that players have given teams when it comes to sharing information about their bodies, in that players have, I don't know if it's like a signed agreement with the CBA, and part of it is that they will allow teams to disclose injuries, basically. So any injury which has occurred to them in the course of play, the team can make known to, you know, to the press and to the public by extension. But COVID, because it's a disease, and if you pay attention to it during the season, you'll actually notice it for other things too, is that they're a bit more cagey about stuff like if somebody has a flu or if somebody has something that isn't injury related that's keeping them from playing. They're not
Yeah.
typically outright saying, oh, well, you know, he's got, you know, food poisoning, or he's got this thing. It's like for a non-disclosed reason, or for like, yeah, non-disclosed health reason. And I think we're seeing more of that now with COVID, and that these guys are being placed on the list. And like, yeah, I think most of us can make an assumption as to why they're there, but they can't actually outright say it without the player's permission.
Yeah, and you know, it very well could be some of those other things too. I mean, like a good example was Leonis Martin having that bacterial infection that almost killed him, and they, you know, they couldn't really say what was going on early in that. Daniel Norris, when he had thyroid cancer, you know, that was up to him to announce. The same thing with Carlos Carrasco and leukemia. So, yeah, you know, that's on up to the player. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe right before opening day, they do have to make some kind of an announcement, like as far as like. And that may be as simple as just like illness or what, you know, what the general injury is. So at some point there will be have to, you know, there'll have to be a declaration, but it seems like for the most part, like players have been fairly open about it, but yeah, it's just hard to know if, you know, all we're getting basically is like the raw results as to how many positive
Yeah.
tests or whatever there are. So
Well, and the other thing
Daniel
that too
no
is that
Daniel Norris wanted everyone to know because he's been injured so many damn times. He wanted to
yeah.
make sure people knew he wasn't injured. He was just.
Well, and I think the other thing too is I think a lot of them just feel like they have to because of the level of speculation. Like,
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure,
if you're
yeah.
not there, you're not showing up at games, like people are just going to start making those assumptions on your behalf. So either you're going to come out and say, yeah, this is the situation that I'm in, or people are just going to start doing it out for you.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So, yeah, it just kind of puts them as everyone's been, and the players have certainly been in most of this year in kind of a weird position that way. But yeah, so such are the times.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Let me just look something up real quick here because I had a question.
Unacceptable.
Yeah. Unacceptable. They have been, I don't know, just to touch on Spencer Torkelson briefly, like, they have been playing him at third quite a bit, and he's obviously working with Alan Trammell a lot. Do you care?
Now that he knows who he is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. Do you care that they're doing that with him? Does it bother you at all?
Why
or...
would it bother me?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they announced him as a third baseman, right? Like, it may not have been kind of what people expected from him, but, you know, a lot of guys, especially when they're that young, are really adaptable to different positions. And why the heck not, now that you've got him and you've got the opportunity to have him playing the same year you've drafted him, why not give him some reps at third and see how he does and see if that really is where you want to build him long term?
Yeah. And just work at it. Like, it can't hurt him. You know, it could make him a better third baseman to play third, in truth. So yeah, I don't have any problem with that either. Although, like, the early returns, I've still been like, yeah, I don't think so. I don't see it happening. But he is only 20 too, and that's, I guess that's another thing we could point out, that he and Gage Workman, both who were the two Tigers draft picks out of Arizona State, both of them are 20, and for college juniors, that's pretty young, and that gives them both, you know, theoretically a little bit more projection than maybe your average college draft pick. So. Yeah, trying to rework their body and test them out on those things and just kind of see what they're capable of and whether it's realistic to play, you know, Torkelson somewhere else other than first is perfectly fine. I'm not bothered. Hasn't looked great at the plate, but you can kind of see just, like, you know, the plate discipline and the awareness and the eye are all there. You know, he just hasn't run into anything yet. I'm sure as soon as he does, it will be all over Twitter and everyone's going to be frothing at the mouth because Riley Green is just getting love like crazy on Twitter all over the place all day. So, yeah, which has been fun.
I mean, I'm in the same fan club.
Yep.
I mean, the other one I've been excited to see is some Jake Rogers making some adjustments at the plate. He's been looking pretty solid.
Yeah.
So not mad at any of that.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, it's... You know, we're not going to get a good feel for it, but one of the things that interested me most this year was just the fact that they changed the player development, you know, squad so much. And then we also saw, you know, a lot of players like working with outside coaches, and Jake Rogers was certainly maybe the biggest example of going to work with Doug Lotto, who's a really highly regarded individual or personal swing coach. And he's come back, yeah, with a lot flatter swing. He cut the leg kick down. He's got his hands down a little bit lower. You know, we kind of saw Jacoby Jones do some of those things last year, and while he was banged up, as per usual, a lot of the season, when he was healthy, Jacoby Jones kind of looked like, oh, wait a minute, we might have the breakout coming. So he'll be another one to watch this year on that score. But yeah, Jake Rogers has been striping the ball on the line into right center field quite a bit. Seems like he's trying to go that way a little bit more. He's hit a home run or two in inter-squad action as well, so... that his progression should be interesting to see this year. I'm just not sure whether or not he's going to get the starting job, because it does feel like, well, not the starting job, but the backup job, because it feels like they really want to try Eric Haas And we'll probably take Grayson Griner north at some point as well, too. And maybe Rodgers will.
Well, don't forget they've got Romine.
Well, yeah, he'll be the starter, sure. Yep. Well, that's what I was saying. He was the starter. Who's getting the backup jobs, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And watching Romine behind the plate has been pretty cool, too, because you can see the framing and the balance and the blocking ability back there. I mean, I've always thought he was a pretty good catcher watching him with the Yankees, but seeing him out there catching some of the prospects and talking with them and stealing some strikes for him and stuff like that, it's been you know, pretty encouraging just to see that the overall that group should have pretty good leadership from a guy who's played in a lot of big games and in an organization that is pretty strict and really does things their way and has a whole process for how their catchers approach the game. He should be bringing some of that in. Yeah, I was talking to Patrick O'Kennedy briefly last night, and we were just talking about the difference is like Joe Vavra going to make a big difference as the hitting coach. And I think like the most interesting point is that it's not just Joe Vavra anymore. Like they've still got Lloyd McClendon as the bench coach. You know, like if a certain guy liked working with Lloyd or they had some rapport, he's still there. They brought in Kenny Graham. So he's now the director of player development, but he was also the minor league hitting coordinator for the Milwaukee Brewers for years. And he's down at Comerica Park working with people as well. So they've just got like a little bit more variety. It's a little bit more of a crowdsourced coaching approach, which is something I've wanted to see ever since Avila took over, was to start bringing in people from other successful organizations and, kind of put all that different knowledge together and kind of have, a whole bunch of different looks from coaches for players to turn to. So I am curious to see how that plays out long term, but in 60 games again, it's going to be hard to tell. We're going to be doing the thing where we short sample size things. And, if a player is like red hot in mid August, it's like, oh my God, they might win the batting title. And it's like, we've also only played like 19 games, but yeah, yeah, they might.
Yeah, it's like maybe let's calm down, but also they might, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's not like... it's not the usual batting title, so yeah, y'all are gonna have to settle down a little bit.
None of it actually matters.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter. To go back to a topic that has been popular between both of us and your other beloved team, the Rays, for a few years. But yeah, the mix and matching of starting and openers and, middle relief guys, piggybacking and like planned ways, all that sort of thing. I really hope that we see them be more creative with that stuff this year. And early returns from Ron Gardenhire, although he did mention it with Fulmer, still seems like he's pretty well set on taking like his five guys and just kind of using a ton of relievers. Which they can do, but there's so many opportunities there. It just seems like, you could, other than Matt Boyd and I guess Spencer Turnbull, like nobody else has any, right or claim to be, expecting to go out there and have the leash to go 6-7 innings. So, I wish they would do that. They've got ground ballers like Nova. They've got, whatever's left for Zim. And then they're going to be trying to put together this fifth starting spot with, Fulmer not being at 100% and Daniel Norris probably not going to be ready. I really wish they would kind of mix and match a little bit more. So, I mean, and maybe they will. Like, they don't, the Tigers sometimes just don't, or at least Ron Gardenhire doesn't like to talk about it in those terms because it sounds woo-woo to his sensibilities.
Yeah, it's too fancy, newfangled.
Yeah, but then, when the season starts, he may very well just be yanking guys after three innings because he's got, 12 guys in the bullpen instead of the usual 7 or 8, and he'll be wanting to get everyone working. So maybe it'll just kind of all work out this way, even if they're not necessarily trying to make it happen.
They might just be forced into it, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, a lot of these decisions are just, it's just going to be circumstance. Like, a lot of it's going to be decided for them. As you know, I wrote that piece with the, and I had the header on it, that COVID-19 is your general manager now. And Rob switched that to a more reasonable title and just used that in the tweet. But yeah, I mean, that really is how it feels. Like, the testing and who's healthy and who isn't is going to be making all these decisions, and teams are just going to kind of have to roll with whatever they got. I have seen, did you get a chance to see Michael Fulmer pitch yet at all?
I haven't.
Okay.
It's been really hard to find clips of anything that are like worth watching.
Yeah, it's just like a couple pitches from like a weird angle. More often than not so far. Hasn't been the usual highlight packages.
Yeah, it's been kind of hard to watch. So really, I've just been hearing and seeing the tweet updates from people that are actually there at the games from a very far distance.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's definitely changed his delivery, and you know, I guess the first thing is that you notice how much leaner he is. Like, he really does look like he's lost quite a
He does
bit.
look fit. Like, I've seen him since he got back, and he looks like he's slimmed down a lot. He looks really muscular. He looks really good.
Yeah. I mean, you can t I mean, you don't really doubt Michael Fulmer's work ethic, but yeah, he definitely looks like he was pretty much crushing it. So yeah, I mean, he's looking slender. He's changed his delivery a little bit to try to take a little bit of the pressure off his right knee. He's not sort of like kinking that right knee in and driving off it quite as much. He's swing, you know, he's doing what you really should do and getting his lead leg out there. And rather than kind of like stepping to the third base side, he's stepping much more on point to home plate and getting his stride, you know, right on plane with home plate, which is better for your release, but not as good for your deception. So it's going to be interesting just to see how his stuff plays, because I know he's not throwing as hard as he used to right now. There's a pretty good chance, you know, based on what we see from Tommy John surgeries, that he will be throwing 95, 96 once he's kind of stretched out and built back up a little bit. But I'm not sure that his stride length is going to be quite as long. I'm not quite sure how the fastball is going to play, but it still looks like Michael Fulmer somehow. Like, he's still getting to a nice high arm slot, throwing downhill. Saw some good sliders. Saw a couple good changeups out of him. So, I mean, everything seems to be coming along pretty well. And again, yeah, like, winning this season isn't the goal. But if they can get Michael Fulmer to pitch every fifth day and keep getting better and better as it goes along, that would be a huge win for this season. And so far, yeah, you know, the returns look, I think, pretty promising.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. Like, I know he had a rough little bit of a start there a couple times, but he seems to be making adjustments to kind of find his way back to it, and it's really good to see that so early on. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yep, absolutely. I wanted to mention Matt Manning because he was on the mound again today and gave up, I think, 3 runs. You know, it was like a couple bloop hits, and then Riley Green took him deep on a changeup away and like just smoked it into the visiting bullpen, I think, or maybe that was the home bullpen, but which is another point in Riley Green's favor. But yeah, Matt Manning compared to Casey Mize hasn't looked nearly as sharp. Like, the breaking ball hasn't been as good as it usually is. Command hasn't been that good. Doesn't seem to be rearing back and throwing super hard yet. So he'll be another one that'll be interesting to watch because he's basically a year behind Casey Mize in his development. And even though for me, he's their top prospect, and I think long term he's the one with the most upside. Casey Mize is just definitely like way more polished and about ready to go. So maybe Matt Manning will get some relief time. I would love to see them like bring Manning and Tarek Skubal when he's ready to go. Put those two guys in the bullpen with, you know, Jimenez and Farmer, and yeah, you might see some fireworks from that group. That would be pretty cool. And you've got to bring these guys up this year, I think, if they're pitching well. Like, they need to pitch in some games. You're not gonna, you know, hurt their service time or any of that
Well,
business. So
and it's
just
not
do
like
it.
they're gonna get the proper reps in a minor league season. They have nothing else to do except kind of bide their time and wait in taxi squad land.
Yep, just
and
playing against
like,
each other in these like
yeah.
inter-squad games. Yeah, how are you going to get your juices up for, you know, 2 months in Toledo, you know, when you're not really facing like pressure and stress and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I hope since they've got these guys that they do plan to use them.
I hope so too. I think it'll also make the season more interesting and engaging to watch for fans,
Yep.
which is something it desperately needs.
Yep, absolutely. Like, if we're gonna do this, you know, you gotta make it as entertaining as possible and take the opportunity to, you know, get your prospects, you know, that your top guys who were, you know, fairly close to being ready anyway, get them in there, get their feet wet, let them see what it's about, and then, you know, you can take your time with them next year, but they'll at least kind of know what they're working for. So I also really like it from the standpoint of like, yeah, you're gonna be stuck in Toledo for a couple, you know, weeks at least. You know, you have something to play for. Like, if you're down there and you're throwing really good, and everybody's like, "Oh yeah, the stuff is just dancing. He's looking great, or he's swinging the bat really well." You know, you should know that you have a chance to come up, and get a little bit of a look. I think just having that carrot at the end of the stick would be helpful for those guys too.
I think it'll be, I'm so excited to see some of those guys play in real games.
Yeah. Yeah. Seeing them together is pretty cool. Like, yeah, it's just like seeing Miguel Cabrera, like, you know, hitting against Matt Manning, like just the idea of it is like just making me real tingly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been excited about that since like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, like you were itching to see those guys and that was all you wanted to talk about. So I think the fact that it's just so damn close to actually happening is very exciting.
Yep. Everybody, all the fans out there who converted to, you know, to prospect hounding, rather than watching as much of the Tigers the past couple of years. Yeah. It's all kind of starting to come to fruition where you can see some of these guys being pretty close. So yeah, that part of it's exciting. Long way to go to build a winner here, but, at least it feels like phase one is kind of complete to where they're one of the top couple farm systems now. And they just need to, you know, make a whole bunch of great trades, make a whole bunch of great free agent signings, and then get lucky a little bit. And bam, we should have this thing locked down by, like, what, 2024?
You know, you say that like it's like, I think it's the, I'm not mad at that. 2024, while very far away, would still be okay. And it would be, what, 40 years exactly from the 1984 win?
Yep.
Wait, did I do that math right?
Yes, you did. Yep. Right, you got it. No,
not a very good math brain person.
Well, in 2014, we were all like, oh, 30 exactly. years, you know, yeah.
I think there's kind of something poetic about that.
Yeah, just don't take till 2024 to be, like, competitive. Like, God, like, next year they should be trying to be, like, a 500 team who's building something. And you can't just keep being bad forever. We should pick nice and high next year. The draft was good. The Tigers drafting overall seems like it's gotten better. The past couple years have been pretty good. And I think that bodes well for the future too, when they're not necessarily picking, you know, top five every year and being terrible every season.
Yes.
We had, like, before we bounce out of here, let's see, there's like two questions to answer. Bunyan 121314 asks, how many draftees from this class will be in the Tigers' top 10 prospects right now? And obviously, Spencer Torkelson, I think, and Dylan Dingler should make it to the catcher. I think he'll probably be around 8 or 9. We're making up and finalizing our list right now. And once the season starts, we'll start writing up the midsummer BYB prospect list, the top 30. I don't think anybody else is going to make it. I think Daniel Cabrera, if I'm not mistaken, came in just outside the top 10. I think that's arguable, but yeah, it would probably just Dingler and Torkelson. And it's been cool that Dingler got to come to camp too. I know, like, Jordy Mercer and some of the veteran guys, Cam Maben, were like, you know, giving those guys a lot of grief about the fact that, like, oh, you guys get drafted and, like, here you are playing in the majors with us. Like, mm-hmm. You didn't have to work for it. There's no bus rides, you know, across, like, you know, tiny town-to-town trips in Iowa and all that kind of crap. No, you're just right here. Okay.
Right with the big boys right away.
Yeah, that's got to be pretty pretty cool and pretty exciting for those guys. Let's see. Oh, okay. And then Subic Sailor. Oh, good to see him. Or her, I guess, possibly. But
God. Yeah, don't make judgments, Brandon. You don't know.
What a sexist bastard I am. let's see. Yes. Any plans for a camp in Lakeland? The young guys need to play, if not in Florida. Could they maybe do a league in Puerto Rico or the Dominican Republic? What's the latest?
No.
Yeah, well, you know, I asked Cody to kind of check into, like, what they're going to do. It was something we were kind of talking about, and I know he's, you know, trying to investigate and figure out what the Tigers are doing with the other prospects who aren't in camp. And, you know, I don't know if there's going to be, like, remote coaching where those guys are, like, you know, can hit in cages or pitch in cages or throw bullpens to whoever's, you know, in their immediate vicinity, and maybe, like, do video conferencing with the coaching staff. It seems like some stuff like that will happen. I think right now, like, the way the country is trending COVID-wise, it doesn't feel like my dreams of a, you know, all prospects, like, Arizona Fall League, you know, Futures League type situation is going to come to pass. I think they're probably going to have to wait, you know, and see how things play out, and then maybe do some kind of winter ball or winter instructional camp. There's talk of doing an instructional league, you know, kind of, or at least camps,
like as the season ends, but right now that it just seems like that's pretty sketchy. Whereas like in Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic, from what I'm hearing, a lot of the guys who are, you know, kind of stuck there and can't come here and don't have anywhere to play, like they're doing what a lot of the major leaguers were doing over the last 3 months, which is just kind of getting together informally and playing scrimmages. And unfortunately that might be all that's really available to those guys until, you know, we get to winter ball and see if, you know, that's feasible. I would assume it probably would be in the Dominican, this winter, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just feel real uncomfortable, in my pseudo role as half-assed baseball expert, epidemiologist. Like, so yeah, I just don't know. Really, well, don't know. I mean,
that's the thing. You can't predict anything like that. You can't know what is and isn't even going to be possible as far as travel's concerned.
Yeah.
And like, it's tough.
Yeah, it is. I mean, obviously teams are thinking about it. I know the Tigers player development staff at least is like, you know, brainstorming this, like, you know, what is the best way to try to get these guys, you know, is whatever the best work that we can get them. It's helpful that most of their top prospects are actually in camp, but I think of guys like Cody Clemens, Parker Meadows, who else am I thinking of? Bryant Packard, Cooper Johnson, like, they're, you know, some of those guys, you know, I hope that they're putting together like really comprehensive like workout plans and conditioning plans for those guys to at least try to take advantage of the time off to like get in, you know, prime shape. Like, you got to try to do that. And then, yeah, otherwise, I mean, I think it's just going to be a lot of like video coaching until they figure out a way to actually have official games. So, yeah, I don't know. It's not ideal for development. You know, everybody's in the same boat at least. But overall, like, you know, this whole year for minor leaguers out there, they've just gotten boned so hard in every way, and it really just sucks. I honestly haven't even wanted to think about it that much because, you know, it's just awful. Like, so many of these dudes' like dreams are just getting absolutely just curb stomped in the middle of a fight between, you know, billionaire owners and, you know, the players. And yeah, it's just like, you know, those guys got their rights kind of undercut, and then yeah, and now they're not playing, and we're also seeing college programs thinking about cutting down on baseball. We're going to see the minor leagues contracted, all of which will probably have no negative impact on baseball as a whole, but it just sucks. It just sucks for a lot of people and for kind of the side of baseball that's just about, you know, enjoying games, you know, and going to games and, you know, having live baseball available all around the country. And you know, there being jobs for, you know, for guys who are in baseball and girls in baseball. Oh my God, I did it again. And then, and
people, Scott, you people. Can just say people, Brandon. We did just have like international non-binary person.
I know. So. Yep. Just got to refer to the persons. Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's, you know, that's just the way it is. Unfortunately, like it's just really kind of bad all around. It's not a great time for minor league players, but it's not a great time for a lot of people. So, you know, I don't know. I assume there's probably a lot of minor leaguers who are older who are really having to have that conversation with themselves. Like, is this time to pull the plug and go and move on to whatever their career is going to be? And then for the young guys, it's just like, you know, hopefully just staying in shape and, you know, working as hard as they can to stay ready for when the call comes next year. And hopefully they're fed and watered in the meantime, and, you know, have some way of taking care of themselves, because good grief, like, the, you know, the stipend isn't too bad, but that's not going to last much longer. I don't think any teams have really committed to paying it past August yet, although presumably they will keep it up at least that long. But that's typically when the minor league season ends, and if they decide to cut it off, then yeah, there's going to be a lot of people scrambling out there, I'm afraid. All right.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty sad, pretty sucky. Yeah. I mean, like you said, it's not going to see an immediate impact. We're not going to really feel it, but all of those small towns that rely on it, all the people that work at those stadiums, like, you know, announcers that were looking to use it as a leg up to get jobs in MLB or higher levels of minor league ball, like it.
Yeah, it's a pipeline for a lot more than
right down the ladder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A pipeline for a lot more than just players. And, yeah, right now it's clogged. You know, we keep bringing up the Erie Seawolves because, you know, they had that big public investment in their stadium, and you know, did this huge renovation, and yeah, and you know, all that's just kind of sitting there and hemorrhaging money. So yeah, we'll just have to see how these things play out. Like, this is going to be a crazy off season for sure. Like, in the decisions that have to come as far as, yeah, free agency, the minor leagues, and all that, and then prepping for the next CBA, it's going to get ugly. So hopefully just for the next 2 months, we'll have a nice window of baseball with no tragedy, and or at least like just the usual tragedies, I don't know. just be able to enjoy some ball as we try to all get through this thing. So I think that'll about wrap it up for tonight.
Yeah, man.
All right. Ashley's got a little Nutmeg with her. So, yeah, scratch Nutmeg on the head and tell him he's a good kitty.
All right. He has left me. He has gone to the cat tower and is no longer sitting and purring on me. What a jerk.
Yeah, he abandoned the podcast, mid-podcast.
He did. What a bastard. Yeah, I was talking too close to his face, and he definitely was like, no, I'm going to go sleep elsewhere. But I can see him, and I will pet him afterwards for everyone. Everyone who's disappointed in me for not giving him a tiger-themed name for an orange cat, I'm aware I failed everyone.
Yeah, you could have called him Torkelson or something. Man.
Yeah, little wee little Spencer.
Yep. He does have a little bit of a Spencer look, but Nutmeg is pretty good name.
Yeah. The second I saw him, I'm just like, Nutmeg.
he looks Nutmeg-ish.
Yeah, he gets called Nugget about 10,000 times more common. Then he gets called Nutmeg, but you know,
yeah,
it is what it is.
That's kind of how it's been with almost all my cats, is that, you know, they have their name, and then there's the 10,000 things I actually like refer to them as baby talk. It's
absolute running joke with pet parents is you give their given name and the name you actually call them are very different things.
Yep.
Like, I have a dog named Ruby, but I 100% call her Rhubarb all the time.
Oh yeah, yep. Yeah, Rhubarb Rubes. Yeah, Ruby Roo.
Ruby is Hagrid. Rubik's Cube. Ruby Tuesday. Betcha. Just the gamut.
Yep, that's how it goes. Alrighty, folks. We will, let's see. We'll probably wait until, like, right before this thing starts and then try to do, like, a opening day pod. So, you can look for that. And, you know, for everybody kind of worrying that there isn't, like, the usual, like, ton of content on the site.
Brace yourself.
Yeah, hang in there. Like, we're getting it together. Don't worry. We'll be back strong shortly. And, we'll get back back at you guys all again next week. Ashley, have a good night.
You too, man. We'll see you soon.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.